Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Before we get started, there's some a script that I need to read. We've been doing this for a while. In accordance with the state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. Prior to speaking or asking a question, I would need board members or consultants to identify themselves, please, and state your name and title. And when votes are taken, votes must be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. And in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or an email advising whether, number one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or number two, the time that the meeting will resume. So with that, I will start with our roll call, and I'll start with board members. Peter Lisi, I am present. Ben Barnes?
Here.
Thank you. Jeff Beckham? Jeff Beckham? Marty Budd?
Here.
Marty Budd.
Thank you. Here.
Andrew Foster?
Here.
Thank you. Daryl Hill?
Present.
Thank you. Julie Savino?
Present.
Kelly Marie Valliers?
Valerie's present.
Valerie's, sorry.
No problem.
And Laura Baker?
I'm Kelly Valerie's designee, present.
Okay, thank you. Chesil Staff? Denise Aguilera?
Here.
Kevin Berry? No. Dan Junji?
Present.
Thank you. Josh Herlock?
I'm here.
Thank you. Carly Levin?
Present.
Thank you. Joanne Makowitz?
Present.
Thank you. Cynthia Peoples?
I'm here.
Thank you. Shannon Reynolds?
Here.
Kara Stewart?
Here.
Thank you. And Yesenia Torres Rivera?
Here.
Thank you. Consultants and vendors, call your company name, if you could please
Peter and Jeanette. I'm also present, Jeanette Weldon.
Well, how about that? You are present and you're not on my list.
Right.
I'm glad you're there, Jeanette. Thank you.
Right.
Consultants and vendors, if I call you or the firm you represent, please identify yourself. Bank of America?
Joe Santoro.
Thank you. Dave Pitney?
Actually, it's Pullman and Comley, and it's Sandra Dawson.
And Judith Blank.
Okay. Hilltop Securities?
Tim Webb.
RBC Capital Markets? Anyone from RBC? Okay, US Bank? Okay, no one. And from the Chesil Advisory Committee, is Matt Rosen on?
Present.
Lou DeLuca? Wilson Luna?
Present.
Anyone else from the Chesil Advisory Committee? All right, hearing none, we can move on to items of business. The meeting's called to order. First item of business, Josh, I believe you're gonna do an introduction.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. I just wanted to briefly introduce Yesenia Torres Rivera. Yesenia started on August 9th with Chesil. She is our new program coordinator and brings some financial aid experience from Western Connecticut State University. Yesenia is doing well, and we're excited to have her on the team. So welcome to Yesenia.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you. Yesenia,
welcome.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all.
Thank you. Next item of business is our minutes from June 24th. I'm hoping that people have taken a look at them. Is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Marty Budd so moves.
Thank you, Marty. Is there a second?
Andrew Foster second.
Thank you, Andrew. The minutes from June 24th have been moved and seconded. Are there any corrections or edits, clarifications that need to be made to the minutes?
There are a number of references in the minutes to things that should have happened between the two meetings. I take it they will appear in the executive director's report, like the healthcare and manufacturing certificate issue, proceeds left over 3 point some million. I take it all of these things will be discussed in your report or Josh's report.
Yes. Any other questions, comments, edits on the minutes? All right, they've been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions?
One abstention. Kelly. And,
okay, Kelly, thank you.
I was not here.
Thank you. All right, motion carries. Next item of business is our election of vice chair. This meeting also serves as our annual meeting, at which time the vice chair is elected by the board. I'm happy to report that Julie Savino has graciously agreed to continue as vice chair for another year. I appreciate that very much, given Julie's knowledge and frontline position with regard to student aid. So with that, I'd be happy to entertain a motion to elect Julie Savino to serve as vice chair for the upcoming year for CHESLA.
Marty Budd so moves.
Thank you, Marty. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Andrew. Any discussion on the motion to elect Julie Savino vice chair of CHESLA for another year? Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. Julie, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to serve.
Thank you.
Good, great. It's a great group.
It is. Thank you. Next item are committee appointments. And again, this meeting serves as our annual meeting when we review, or in the time leading up to this, we review committees and committee chairs. And at this point, we have an agreement for the chair of our audit finance HR committee, similar to Julie. Marty Budd has very graciously agreed to chair that committee. And I would entertain a motion to appoint Martin Budd as chair of the audit finance human relations committee. Would someone like to make that motion?
So moved. This is Ben.
Thank you, Ben. Is there a second?
Andrew Foster, second.
Thank you, Andrew. Any comments, questions, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion appointing Marty Budd as chair of our audit finance HR committee, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions?
I abstain for obvious reasons.
Thank you, Marty. Motion carries, and Marty, thank you very much for serving to chair this committee. Now, there is one other committee and committee appointments to serve as members of both the audit finance and on the consultant vendor committee, and we will finish up those appointments at our next meeting, I believe, in November. But Marty, thank you again for serving as chair. Next item of business, I will turn it over to the folks from Cohen-Resnick for a review of the financials.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, everyone, for having us
today. Hold on, Melissa, just a second. I just wanted to first introduce the fact that we have Cohen here as the last year of their second three-year engagement with us. They are going to present on the financial statements, but I am going to turn over to Carly first, who is going to do a presentation of some internal comments before Cohen-Resnick goes.
Okay.
Carly.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you. I'm going to start on page 79 in the board packet, or if you're just looking at the audit, it's page 59. It's the statement of net position for CHESLA. The operating revenues were $8.7 million, which is a decrease from fiscal 2020 of $639,000. The primary reason for the decrease was the CSLF contribution in fiscal 2021, which was $500,000 compared to $1.5 million in fiscal 2020. Operating expenses decreased by $1.1 million from fiscal 2020. The main reason for the decrease is the scholarship expense in fiscal 2021 was $490,000 compared to $1.5 million in fiscal 2020. Total operating loss was $909,000 in fiscal 2021 compared to fiscal 2020, which had a total operating loss of $1.4 million. And the change in net position for fiscal 2021 after non-operating income is negative $840,000, which is a decrease of $1.3 million from fiscal 2020. Next, I was going to move on to page 78. Or 58 in your audit and take a look at the balance sheet. We'll take a look at the student loan receivable net of allowance, which was $127.5 million, a decrease of $8.7 million from fiscal 2020. The in-school program had a decrease of $7.3 million, and the refinance program had a decrease of $1.4 million. Bonds payable of $175 million is a decrease of $17.6 million from fiscal 2020. In fiscal 2021, CESLA closed two new bond issues totaling $34.3 million, and CESLA also redeemed additional bonds of $14.7 million with the use of excess revenues. And the total net position as of June 30, 2021 was $32.5 million. So if anyone has questions, otherwise I'll pass it on to Melissa at Cone. Okay. I'm all set. Thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Again, Melissa Ferrucci, partner in charge of the audit at Cone Resnick. I'm joined today by my team members, Kristen Brown, a director at Cone Resnick, as well as Josh Labonte, senior on the account. And I'd just like to confirm, can you see my screen? And are you seeing the presentation?
This is Peter Lisi, I can see it.
Excellent. So today I'd first like to start by thanking the CESLA team for all of their help and hard work, cooperation on the audit. Many, many hours have gone into this audit. And again, we appreciate all of the efforts of the CESLA team members. Today, we'll present to you as part of our presentation, the various reports that we have issued. We will provide you with the required communications in accordance with auditing standards and discuss future considerations or GASBs coming up in fiscal years 22 and 23. And with that, I will turn it over to Kristen Brown, director from Cone Resnick.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Melissa. Good morning, it's Kristen Brown, director, Cone Resnick, and I am gonna go through some of the information for you. We are going to issue an opinion on the financial statements, which is for CHIFA, which includes both CESLA and CSLF. That opinion will be a clean or unmodified opinion. The audit was performed in accordance with government auditing standards, and the financial statements are in accordance with generally accepted auditing principles. We'll also be providing an agreed upon sheet procedures report for CSLF, as well as the tax return. We had no findings or recommendations that came out of our audit. There's some communications that we need to have with you as governance, and those include that we are independent and maintained independence throughout the audit. We have reviewed the significant accounting policies set by management to make sure that they were being followed as noted. We review significant accounting estimates, and for CESLA, that happens to be the allowance on doubtful accounts for your loan receivables. For CSLF, the same thing. They're done in different manners, but they appeared reasonable based on our audit work. as well as we look at the fair value of the investments on the financial statements. Based on our discussions with management and the audit work that we performed, we did not notice any fraud within the audit statements. We had no significant difficulties in performing the audit. There were no adjustments to the accounting records prepared by management and no past adjustments as well. There were no disagreements with management. We will be requesting that management sign a representation letter telling us that everything they provided to us was true and accurate. As far as we are aware, there were no consultations with other accountants. And additionally, you do have required supplementary information as well as the subschedules to the financial audit, and we looked at those as well. So in reviewing Chesla, hold on a second. You had a very strong balance sheet. If you just give me a minute. Where you had about $210 million in assets as compared to $177.5 million of liabilities and deferred inflows. Your net position decreased $840,000 as compared to a prior year increase of $451,000. Most of the swing was due to investment income in the prior year. Decrease in the allowances for the current year, this year at $120,000 versus $188,000 in total from the prior year. And currently in 2021, you also had the funding of $500,000 of scholarships from CSLF. From the CSLF side, a strong balance sheet, $147 million in assets versus $123 million in liability. Your net position increased to about $1.1 million as compared to $1.3 million increase in the prior year. As noted before, the transfer of scholarships to Chesla and a decrease in your loan loss reserves of $226,000 for the current year. And I'll pass it back to Melissa.
Thank you, Kristen. So future GASBs coming down the pike for fiscal year 22 include GASB 87, the new lease accounting standards, GASBs following FASB in accounting and implementation of new leasing standards for next fiscal year. GASB 93, replacement of interbank.
Excuse me for a second. This is Marty Budd. Can you tell us what is likely to be the effect with respect to Chesla and CSLF of the new leasing standards?
Sure. Right at this time, the exact effect is unknown. Management will have to take an inventory of their leases to determine, based on materiality, whether or not the standards will apply. So at this point, the effect is unknown, Marty.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. GASB 93, replacement of interbank offered rates. And then for fiscal year 2023, GASB 96, which is subscription-based information technology arrangements, whereby there's new accounting standards around these arrangements. And again, the organization will have to determine whether these GASBs apply. And with that, that concludes our presentation. I'd like to turn it over now to any questions.
Any questions for Melissa? Questions? All right.
Thank you.
I guess not. Well done. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Kristen. Okay. Jeanette, Executive Director's Report.
Yes, and I think, Peter, I think we typically have a vote to accept the audited financials. Is that correct, Denise?
Yes,
or do we not need yes. that? Okay.
Yes, you typically do have a vote.
Denise, we need a vote? Okay.
Yes.
Marty, so moves.
Thank you, Marty. Second?
Julie Savino, second.
Thank you, Julie. Are there any questions? Questions or comments on the audited financials? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to accept the audited financials as presented by Cohen Resnick, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you. Motion carries. Now we can go to the authority updates, starting with Jeanette's report.
Yes, thanks, Peter. So hopefully you all had the chance to read the press release from the governor's office, which Josh circulated to all board members regarding the governor's bill signing that was held on August 19th for the Cheslow Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program. And as you know, this program will provide an interest rate subsidy on Cheslow loans to teachers who commit to teaching in one of Connecticut's 33 highest need school districts. So the bill signing itself by the governor was certainly a very significant event for Cheslow. And adding to the significance of that, it was the bill signing was also attended by the newly nominated Education Commissioner, Charlene Russell Tucker, who was actually nominated just that morning to become the commissioner. So we were very pleased that we were able to take this from a legislative proposal all the way to the point of having a bill signing by the governor. And again, just want to recognize the work done by Denise Aguilera as general counsel, Dan Gingy as legislative liaison, and Josh Herlock, assistant director for Cheslow. And we are currently working with the Department of Education on an implementation plan so that the program can be in place for the next recruiting cycle in the spring. And the next step is also to secure bond commission approval for the $7 million of state funding that's part of the new law. And another item I wanted to make the board aware of is...
Jeanette, yes. I had a question on that. This is a whole new process for Cheslow, and hopefully by November, at our November meeting, you can set out what the forms are that people use to apply, how we're going to check them, how much support we have, how many of these scholarships we can give out at reduced rates. So there are a lot of questions on the implementation plan, which hopefully you'll report to us in November.
Yes, I can provide an outline of the plan, what we're working through with SDE to finalize the parameters and then ultimately how we will be tracking students and confirming their status, et cetera.
Thank you.
Also wanted to mention that on November 15th, we are planning to redeem a portion of the outstanding 2019 Series A bonds. And most of you will recall that the 2019 Series A bonds are the taxable bonds that were issued in the amount of $5 million to fund loans through our refi program. There are about $640,000 of bond proceeds remaining, and we also have about $1 million or so of excess revenues in the trust that are attributed to the Series A bonds. And so the plan is to use all of those dollars towards a redemption on November 15th. Right now, you know, there is about $25,000 annually of negative carry associated with the unused bond proceeds. And given that we have internal dollars available to make refi loans, so the program, you know, will continue. We will just not be relying on that remaining portion of bond proceeds to make loans. And those internal dollars, if you recall, there were some refi loans which were made in the early, the startup of the program, which are outside of the trust. And so right now there is about $1.7 million of internal dollars, which we can use towards future refi loans. So the notice of redemption will be going out in the coming days. And as I said, the redemption date would be November 15th. Jeanette,
I had a couple of questions. One, where are you getting the extra money to repay the bonds?
So it's a combination of the remaining bond proceeds, which is, as I mentioned, about $640,000. Right. And then we have the revenues as loans are repaid, that's generating revenues. And after we, deduct expenses that are part of the operations of the trust, there are excess revenue dollars remaining. And that's a scenario that repeats itself across the portfolio on the tax exempt side as well. And so the bond documents provide for redemption from excess revenue. So it's
this is partial redemption.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. So
I didn't understand that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Tim Webb with Hilltop Securities, if I may.
Yeah, please go ahead, Tim.
Just a comment. Generally across the student loan space right now, people are having difficulty in originating refinance loans. Because of so much press out there with regard to the potential of forgiveness related to direct student loans, borrowers are holding on. This is what we're hearing from multiple issuers across the United States, that the refi volume is just way down as a result of thinking that, hey, I'm going to get my loan forgiven at some point. So I just wanted the board to understand that I don't think this is unique here with CESLA and the inability to originate some of those loans. It's a phenomenon that we are seeing as a financial advisor to a number of authorities across the United States. Just wanted to get that out there.
Thank you, Tim. Are there any other questions about the redemption? Okay, and then lastly, I wanted to mention, if you recall, when we had our strategic planning session some months ago, there was a request for more board education. And so for CESLA, we will be starting with a board education session next month. It will be kind of a bonds 101 type of offering, which I think was one of the specific requests. And that will be led by Tim Webb at the November, as part of the November board meeting.
This is Tim again. I expect everybody to have a lot of coffee that morning.
Right.
Will we be calling Professor Webb?
That will work, Mr. Chair. Hey, you works just as well.
Okay.
So that covers the authority updates. And so we can move on to the portfolio if you'd like.
Well, Jeanette, could you say something about the healthcare and manufacturing certificate?
We are continuing to, you're talking about from a scholarship perspective?
Yes.
Yeah. So we are continuing to offer, as part of this rolling ability for people to apply for scholarships for those programs. And Josh, do you have any updated numbers about the number of scholarships for the certificate programs?
The minutes said it opened July 1st, so you've had July, August, and some of September.
Yeah, so I can touch on that briefly. So it did open July 1st. Also, as you recall, Marty, we did remove the expected family contribution component from the certificate scholarships this year in hopes to increase the volume. I believe a few applications have been started. Yesenia, do you have the exact number off the top of your head?
Yeah, so there's been about 8 that have been submitted, but we are waiting for the letter of recommendations to come through for them to be completely approved.
Thank you.
Okay. Josh, you want to walk us through the portfolio update?
Sure. I hope you don't get sick of hearing me talk. So I will start on page 85 of the board package. I first wanted to touch on the net default rate for the in-school loan program, which is historically 2.15%. This is an increase from 1.99% after the end of quarter three. That's a pretty significant jump from a quarter to quarter basis. However, I think this is merely a function of when we were sending the loans to collections. You know, for a while due to COVID, since March 2020, we were really working with borrowers, trying to help them bring their loans back to current. And recently in the fourth quarter is when we restarted sending loans to collections. So I think it's more of a timing factor more than anything else than any significant concern about default rates. To that end, to provide a little bit of context, in fiscal year 2021, we've sent about $900,000 to collections. The amount sent to collections in fiscal 20 was very low due to the pandemic. That was $400,000. But then in years fiscal 19 and in 2018, we sent about $700,000 to collections. So it's an increase from those full years in 2019 and 2018, but it's not a significant increase to be concerned about. On the refi side, the net default rate increased from 1.31% to 1.76%. Again, this is just a function of timing. We sent a refi loan to collections in the fourth quarter. Overall, the portfolios are performing well. The forbearance and delinquency rates are below the historical norm, except for the refi program where the delinquency rate is slightly higher than the historical levels, but it's not a significant increase. Are there any questions there before I continue on? Okay, hearing none.
Just to remind the board, when we run the cash flows for the issuance, we presume a 12% default rate with regard to the Chesla in-school loans with a 30% recovery. So even with that 30% recovery, we're running default rates roughly four times higher than what Josh is experiencing in real life.
Thank you, Tim. So moving on, I will skip to page 88, the loan disbursement data. For the fourth quarter, we disbursed about $480,000, which was about $231,000 to students attending Connecticut institutions and about $249,000 to students attending an out-of-state school. You can see the total for the year, fiscal 21, we disbursed about $18 million, which represented a 26% decrease from fiscal 20. As a reminder, we had downsized our 2020 bond deal by 28%. So the expectations were right in line with the disbursements that we saw. Moving on to page, let's see, we'll go to page 90. We have the market segment data for the entire fiscal year. From a school standpoint, status quo. The top three schools continue to be Sacred Heart, UConn, and Quinnipiac. Moving to page 91, we have
Josh.
Go ahead,
Josh. Yep. Josh, this is Marty Budd. Yes. You usually have a show about originations compared to. Here, I see that's coming up.
Yeah, you're just ahead of me. That's actually what I was just going to get into.
Okay.
So on page 91, we have our 2020B comparison to the cash flow assumptions. Through August, we are about $70,000 ahead of the assumptions. And you can also see at the bottom there, $2 million in committed loan applications. So basically, we have committed all the remaining funds for the 2020B series. Are there any questions on that? Marty, do you have any questions?
Yes. In the minutes, it said you had $3.5 million left over from the last issue. And is that in any way reflected in these documents? Because it really refers to the last issue. I take it you used all that up.
Yeah, I think it's reflected here on this page. You'll see the July disbursements of about $100,000 and then the August disbursements of about $1.3 million. And then if you combine that with the $2 million remaining in committed loan applications, that gets you right up to the $3.5 million.
But that's from the previous issue, not the cash flow, or these are cash flow and assumptions that included the 2020 issuance?
Yeah, so Marty, to be clear, this is the cash flow, the comparison to the cash flow assumptions for the 2020B series. So the prior year series where we had the about $3.5 million.
Yeah, but it says at the top, doesn't it say at the top 2021B?
I'm on page 91. So page 91 is 2020B. The next page would be 2021.
I think that perhaps some clarity here. When we did the 2020 issue, we had a set of assumptions relative to the speed and the principal amount of loans being originated. Then when we re-ran cash flows in preparation for the 21 issue, Josh looked at what was remaining in the 20 proceeds and made some adjustments with regard to the origination schedule. And I think that's what's reflected here on page 91.
Thank you.
Is that correct, Josh?
Yeah, thank you, Tim. So Marty, are you good there?
Yeah, I'm with it.
Okay. So moving to page 92, we have the comparison to cash flow assumptions for the new series, the 2021B series. Through August, we are about $159,000 ahead of the cash flow assumptions, and we have about $6 million committed as of September 3rd. Overall, through August, from a pure disbursement perspective, regardless of series, we're between $50,000 and $100,000 ahead of last year through August. So a little bit of an increase, but it seems like the disbursements might be a little bit slower than we had anticipated. You know, maybe we expected a little bit more of a rebound this year. And I know some schools out there, I've seen articles, some schools out there are still having enrollment issues. To that end, I would also say too, I reached out to Campus Door regarding our disbursements, and our drop of 26% last year in loan volume was significantly less than many other lenders. So because we did not see a significant of a drop last year in fiscal 20, maybe that's why our rebound so far this year in fiscal 21 has not been as great as expected. But nonetheless, we're ahead of the cash flow assumptions, and we're ahead of where we were last year through August. Are there any questions there before I move on?
Mr. Chair, I had a question for the vice chair. This is Tim Webb with Hilltop.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
I was curious, Julie, whether or not your borrower, the borrowers that are at your institution, have noticed the fact that there's no longer a guarantee fee, and if that has helped with students taking out loans.
I'm not so sure, Tim, that's really made much of a difference. I mean, I think that our volume right now, or perhaps maybe what we've seen, has gone up as a result of our increased enrollment. But I haven't seen anything regarding the guarantee fee. I think what we've noticed here is we felt our volume with Chesla wasn't as high as what we would have liked to have seen it be. Because of the no guarantee fee and the low interest rate. But my understanding is that a lot of families are then going into the MIFA program and the RISLA program, which doesn't restrict it to state residency anymore. So they've opened up their programs differently. So we seem to think that we've had a rise on the MIFA and the RISLA side purely because of the way they've opened up their programs. So I don't know if that's, if that has anything to do with a shift in volume, but that's kind of what we're seeing at this point.
That's an interesting comment because to the extent that a student is either a Connecticut resident or attending a school in Connecticut, they would be eligible, presuming they meet the other criteria for a Chesla loan.
Correct.
So that kind of surprises me with regard to the thought.
Yeah. What of the MIFA and the RISLA, you mean?
Well, the MIFA and RISLA, the only way they could offer a loan that was finance tax exempt is if the student from a MIFA was a Massachusetts borrower. Right. And same for Rhode Island for RISLA.
Right. But well, that's changed. Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it has. They have taxable funds out there that they're offering loans. Just don't know what their interest rate is that they're offering on a taxable side.
Yeah. It seems to be very competitive. So I'm not sure why the shift in the increase into those loan programs. We can only see maybe their marketing and their publications or whatever with their changes have made a difference there. But I mean, we're holding, our volume is holding only because we have just such a large increase in our enrollment this year.
Tim and Jeanette, with respect to the taxable refi, our originations have been significantly under the projections. And I know we're talking about redeeming some of the bonds, but I would be interested in seeing a current projection of cash flows. Maybe you're going to do that in connection with the redemptions, because it looks like we could have be maybe $500,000 under projections. I know we are going to use the excess proceeds as part of the redemptions, but I think it would be useful to see whether, with all of the factors, including the redemptions, we won't have a default.
I think we covered this previous at an earlier meeting, Marty, that we remain very comfortable, and I believe we projected out through the end of the fiscal year to show that there were ample dollars available to pay debt service on the 2019A bonds. So we can...
I'd like to see it going forward. Obviously, we didn't have a default this year or we would have heard about it. But I'm looking at the next years through maturity.
Right. I think we went through the end of calendar 21, but we can certainly refresh that and send it around again.
Right, but no, it's not through just 20. When you say through calendar 21, you're looking at payments in 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, when we come up towards the issue in the spring, that would be part of the analysis. Absolutely.
So,
because if you recall that the 2019 bonds are part of the 2019 trust, which includes everything that's been issued since 2019. So we don't run.
Does that include the taxables as well?
Yes, the taxables were issued in the 2019 trust.
I see. So all the money is fungible, and that we're doing quite well, I guess, in the in the tax exempt portion of the indenture. But those excess funds are available for the taxable refi.
And in addition thereto, if you recall, when the 2019 A's, which were the taxable issue, were issued, the authority contributed quite a bit of equity to back those bonds. Right. I think roughly about $2 million over and above the issuance of the bonds. So there is significant equity that is apportioned to those bonds.
Right. Okay. I feel better.
And also, Marty, in the proposed redemption, you know, we are looking at redeeming from excess revenues that are 2019A refi related excess revenues. So the dollars are there.
Right. But you're just using for the refi the Series A. You're not any money from any other series.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you all. Moving on to page 93. Marty's kind of, we've already touched on this a bit, but this is the comparison to the cash flow assumptions for the refi 2019A. Through August, we're behind about $247,000. This is a result, as Tim mentioned, many federal borrowers holding on to the potential for a loan forgiveness, but also the continual extension of the federal COVID benefits, the 0% rate and no monthly payment up until January. Also, as Tim referenced, refi volume has been sluggish across the industry. I reached out to our loan originator, Campus Door, and they have also confirmed that refi volume is sluggish across all of their lenders. So as Tim mentioned, Chesil is not outside of the norm. And then as Jeanette also referenced in her update, we plan to redeem these bonds on November 15th with the unused proceeds and some excess revenue. Moving on to page 94, we have the refi CT loan disbursement data fiscal year comparison. In fiscal year 21, we disbursed $1.3 million, which represents a drop of 44% from fiscal year 20. Continuing on through the reports on page 97, I just wanted to touch on the refi portfolio. And for those borrowers that do refinance, those borrowers are reducing their interest rate by over 2%, by 2.06% over their weighted average of the loans they are refinancing. On page 98, we have our performance dashboard. I just wanted to touch on the UAS servicer performance data. UAS had a good quarter, and all standards were met. On page 99, we have Campus Door in school performance data. Campus Door met both standards regarding average speed of answer and maximum abandon rate. And then lastly, on page 100, Campus Door performance for the refi program as loan originator, both standards were met there as well. So that's it for my report. Are there any further questions?
Uh,
Questions for Josh? Okay, thank you, Josh. Josh, Shannon, you can walk us through the social media and marketing.
Hello, everybody. So I'm going to start with page 102. There is one correction, so I apologize. So for Google Analytics, it's only going to be for the rest of the remainder of the last fiscal year. So it's actually June 1st instead of July 1st. So I apologize for that oversight. But otherwise, other than that, our standard goal across the board is to build awareness for all of CHESLA's programs, including the new ones. And just for June alone, we had over 2,000 new visitors to the website and over 5,000 page views. Consistently, we're kind of staying flat with 80% of online traffic coming from organic searches and direct to the site, which really just means that people do know who we are, or we're coming up organically in Google searches. And over 3,000 sessions, just in interactions and engagements on our website. And then our top website referrals for June were Facebook, Goodwin University, Teach Dollars and Cents, Granite Face, which is the link or the platform for our scholarship application, CT Scholarships, ConnecticutTeach.org, History.com, and the Connecticut Office of Higher Education. And then about 40% of our referrals that come from social media are from Facebook, which is our most active and used social media page. Any questions on that? Okay, 103, please. In regards to marketing, for June, we released our 2021 scholarship virtual recognition video. It was released, it was sent to all of our recipients, as well as posted on our social media platforms and website. We also created a Twitter account so we can continue to actively engage on digital space. This is kind of the first round. We followed people, we started to build our content, and now we're gonna do more outreach in order to gain more followers. And then we continue to do outreach for refi and our employer repayment program. And these are just some of the images that we use on our social media platforms and in our marketing. And that's all I have, unless someone has specific questions for me.
Any questions for Shannon? All right, thank you, Shannon.
Thank you.
And Josh, is there gonna be a scholarship update?
Yeah, it should be brief. I'll kick it off. So we dispersed $441,000 on September 2nd in scholarships for the undergraduate program. And then Yesenia can touch on some of the disbursements that are pending due to enrollment verification.
Hi, everyone. So we have about 100,000 left to disperse. There are a few schools that we are waiting to hear back from to verify enrollment for the recipients. Some of the big disbursements would be for like Southern, Connecticut State University, and Quinnipiac. So we're just reaching out to them just this week and last week and this week to see. A lot of the schools are waiting for ad drop to end before they can verify. So we'll be waiting on that. We already touched base on this for the certificate scholarship applications. There are about 8 that have been submitted, and for them, their application to be complete, we do have to wait for the letters of recommendation. So we're just waiting on that for them to be evaluated. And that's about it for me.
Yesenia, this is Josh. Quick question for you. Are there other certificate applications in the pipeline that have been started? Do you have a sense of how many have been started but have not been submitted?
Yes, there are about 20 that in the drafts. I've looked through them. Some of them, they're not completed. I think a lot of them realize that their program is not a certificate program. But a lot of them are probably just not finished with it. So I will be reaching out to them as well to see if there's any confusion, if they need help, and things like that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions on the scholarship update? All right. Any other business anyone would like to bring forward regarding Cheslow? Other business? Anything for the good of the cause?
Chair Lisi, this is Tim with Hilltop. I'd like to know, what are the name of Kelly's cats?
that one I can't help you on. Kelly?
I have two. The black and white one is Mama's, and the other striped one is Savannah.
They are definitely the best co-workers. They made cameo appearances.
Yes, they usually do.
All right. Hearing no other business other than a feline update, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Andrew, I'll second it.
Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? We are.